Epilogue. The game was over, and I had somehow managed to survive, purely by chance. Everything in my life seemed to have happened by chance. Chance led me to marry Miko while I was in a drunken state. Chance saved me from a life of quiet desperation down in Junktown. Chance led me to the Pyramid Club and made my path across Akeem Sakara's. I took a chance, bet everything on a turn of the cards, and won. But I had lost my winnings in the large game Sakara played with me. And when everything seemed blackest, I won the one chance in a trillion at the lottery and escaped Sakara's men, thanks to a chance encounter with Kami's bandit squadron. But I had escaped only to play another, even larger game of chance, one that had come close to killing me. The game was over, as far as the home audience was concerned. But for me, it was only just beginning. One game ends, another starts, the stakes keep getting bigger. It seemed I had no control at all. Does anybody? It all came down to chance. I could not escape the strange tricks of my leprechauns, nor the gloomy fatalism of my Russian ancestors. The leprechauns were gamblers. The archbishops were survivors. Somewhere between the two, there was a balance point on which I was precariously perched, compelled to spend my life forever taking chances, living on the ragged edge of dreams. The shuttle to New York was leaving in 10 minutes, and I was going to be on it. Breck and I sat in the bar, drinking coffee. We hadn't said a word in half an hour.
"It's still 10 minutes,
Breck said, breaking the silence finally.
"What?
That was the fourth time you checked your watch in the past 30 seconds.
Oh.
Would it help to talk?
I don't know.
You want to stay?
I shook my head.
I can't. It's not my world anymore, Rudy. Maybe it was once, but not anymore. Even if Coles would let me stay, which I somehow doubt, there's a little thing inside my head that's changed the game on me. I can't just pretend it isn't there. I can't go back.
I know the feeling,
Breck said.
I guess you do. You know, it's funny, but the first time I met you, I didn't like you very much. I didn't trust you. I thought you were only out for yourself. You had this big reputation as the game's number one villain, but you've proved to be a good friend, Rudy.
He smiled.
And the first time I met you, I was convinced you would quit after the first scenario. That is, if you managed to survive it. You talked a good game, but I did not believe you had the nerve for it. I am glad I was wrong. I suppose it only proves that people are not always what they seem.
Unfortunate choice of words, under the circumstances, I said, thinking of the ambimorph.
I stared into my coffee.
I wonder what our friend Coles, the thought cop, intends to do with us. You think we're going to be drafted into his spook army?
We know much more than we should,
said Breck.
That put us on the inside, as Coles would probably say. It appears you have bought into yet another high-stakes game, O'Toole.
Yeah, and I probably can't afford this one either. But what the hell? It's never stopped me before.
Breck grinned, then became silent for a moment.
You wanted to know about me and Stone.
I shook my head.
Forget it.
It seemed important to you at the time. I know it bothered you. Perhaps it makes no difference now, but if it would help settle anything between us.
Friends don't need to ask for explanations, I said. And you don't owe me any.
Stone didn't. Either. Breck nodded.
What's bothering me right now is something a great deal more important, I said. You think Coles or whoever was behind him was in on this whole thing all along?
I'm not sure what you mean. You're referring to the game?
I nodded.
I just keep thinking about how quickly they moved in. Coles seemed to adapt to the process as if he'd been a player master for years.
I've thought about that too. The game seems to have the potential to be far more than a mere game. It makes me wonder how far that potential has been explored by Coles or by people like him. It's an unsettling thought.
It's all a game in the end, I said. The game of power. People like Cole seem to control all the pieces. They write all the rules, but the Ambimorphs are going to add in a few new wrinkles. It's a whole new game now, and I've been thinking about how the rules are going to be rewritten. What you said about them sterilizing Draconis.
I shook my head. I don't think they're going to do it. Breck raised his eyebrows.
What makes you think so? It would be the logical thing to do. They would be crazy not to.
Yes, well, I haven't noticed that the universe is particularly logical, but I have noticed that it's crazy. If they sterilized Draconis 9, it would be essentially unusable for years, wouldn't it?
I should think it would take at least several generations to repair the damage,
Breck said,
assuming an all-out commitment.
You think anybody really wants to pay for that?
I said.
I doubt the Combine will have much choice.
It is only the Combine that would be affected,
I said.
It's Coles and the people he represents as well. They need the fire crystals for their tachyon drives and weapon systems and whatever. They might well find another source, but it would be expensive, as would be the cleanup of Draconis after a surgical strike. Plus, there's one other consideration. There's no way of knowing how many Ambimorphs had managed to break the quarantine. A surgical strike against their homeworld is the one thing Coles has to hold over them. It's the one basis for some kind of negotiation. Burn out Draconis, and there won't be anything left to hold back the Ambimorphs who've made it to Earth and to the colony worlds.
Breck stared at me for a long moment.
You are beginning to sound like Coles.
I'm trying to figure out how the man thinks,
I said.
All of a sudden, I'm sitting down at the table with him, and he's got all the chips and all the cards. I could have burned that Ambimorph, but Coles wanted it alive. You're a soldier, Rudy. You're trained to think in terms of defeating the opposition. Try thinking like a politician, in terms of cost-effectiveness, deals, and trade-offs. It's a lot like being in a poker game when you come to think about it. We've got X number of Ambimorphs who've broken the quarantine and are posing a threat. That's the hand the other player's got, the cards you can't see. You know the other guy's got a good hand, but you don't know how good. You have no way of knowing if what you've got can beat it.
Breck nodded.
So what do you do?
I said.
If you call and he's got you beat, he takes the pot and you're effectively out of the game. Because if you lose the pot, you've only got enough to maybe make it through another hand or two, and it'll cost you everything you've got left. Odds of coming out ahead are non-existent. Odds of coming out even are poor, at best. What you've put into the pot is Earth and the colony worlds. What he's put in is Draconis 9. You haven't put in everything. You each got some left in reserve, but not a lot. Not enough that either of you can afford to throw in your hand.
So, what does the prudent gambler do?
Said Breck.
I grimaced. There's no such thing as a prudent gambler. There are only amateurs and pros. The amateur plays hunches. The pro goes with the odds. And we're all pros at this table. Suppose we act like amateurs and throw in everything we've got on one big raise and call his bluff. We snuff Draconis, call, and he lays down a royal flush. A staggering number of Ambimorphs infiltrated into human society, penetrated into key positions, nothing holding them back from all-out war. Read 'em and weep. But, being pros, are we going to take that chance? No, that isn't smart. Instead, what we're going to do is call on everything we've got, all our professional experience, and test each other's nerve. We're going to raise each other a little at a time, watching the other guy's face carefully, looking for anything, the slightest tick, the smallest bead of sweat, the tiniest flicker in the eyes that gives us a better idea of what the odds are, of just how good a hand he's got and just how confident he is. And we're going to hope like hell our own poker face won't crack and that his will before we've used up all our reserve. We're looking for a break in his concentration, one Ambimorph or more, to lock away somewhere in a lab and study. Figure out how to detect the bastards so we can get the infiltrators and wipe them out on Draconis without having to resort to a surgical strike that would damage the planet for years to come.
And where do we come in? You and I, how do we fit into this game?
Said Breck.
We're the bluff cards that are filling out the hand,
I said.
Or maybe we're the ones Coles is thinking of discarding. Depends on how things go, I guess. Maybe he'll throw out some other cards and draw something that will reinforce us. Who the hell knows? But he's the one holding the hand, the way I see it. And Psychodrome just happens to be the table we're all sitting at. We know there are a lot of people out there with biochips hardwired into their brain. At least one Ambimorph, who has apparently learned how to control it. And other Ambimorphs could get biochips the same way ours got his. That links all us in the same game. Them, us and the public out there who tune into the game.
Only the moment word gets out about this, Breck said, the public will panic. At the very least, they'll stop tuning in.
I thought about that, I said. I tried thinking about it the same way Coles would. And you know what I decided I'd do in his place? I'll tell you something. I don't know what scares me more, the fact that I could think this way, or the fact that this is probably just what Coles will do. Instead of trying to stop any of this from getting out, I would go public with it. Only, I would go public with it as a lie. It isn't really happening. It's all part of the game. A brand new wrinkle. A new and continuing scenario for Psychodrome. The alien invasion.
Now you're getting carried away, said Breck. It would never work. The moment the Embermorphs committed their first significant terrorist attack, it would all be out in the open.
Not if it's a part of the game, I said. That's the beauty of it. And the horror of it, too. Anything you can hush up, to a large extent, you pass off as an hallucinact. Otherwise, you establish that the game's incorporating reality into its scenarios. Something it's already doing anyway. Only now, various isolated incidents of violence are going to be incorporated into one so-called conspiracy. A fictional alien invasion. Some building blows up somewhere, killing X amount of people, and it becomes actually some sort of accident, you see, but it becomes incorporated into the alien invasion scenario. Any statement claiming that the Draconians were responsible becomes accepted by the media and the public as a press release from Psychodrome, taking advantage of a real-life event to publicize a game scenario.
They'd never get away with it, said Breck. At the very least, relatives of those killed in terrorist attacks would institute legal proceedings against the game.
On what grounds? I said. There's no law against basing a fictional entertainment on real-life news events, which are public domain. Besides, Coles and his people own the system. If anyone got in their way and threatened to expose it all, they'd simply be squashed like a bug. Remember what Coles said? He'd break every law ever written to safeguard the security of the human race. He sees himself as the man with the Holy Grail. And for all I know, maybe he is. God help us. He's already co-opted us. Do you recall him asking? You want to test his resolve? Miss the shuttle. Go to the press. See what happens.
They announced the boarding call for the shuttle to New York. For a moment, Breck acted as if he hadn't heard it. For a moment, I thought he was actually considering my suggestion, but then he looked up at me with a strange expression on his face and got up to leave.
It appears she didn't come, he said, looking around.
I thought back to the last time I had left Japan. It seemed like a century ago. I wondered if there would ever be a next time.
Cammy's not much for goodbyes, I said.
As we stepped onto the slideway, Breck gave me a nudge. I turned into the direction he was looking and I saw her, dressed in black and silver lycras, standing at the bottom of the ramp, flanked by a couple of young bandits. She wasn't the type to wave, but she gave me a slight nod, then turned on her heel and walked away without a backward glance.
Unusual young woman, Breck said.
Yes, she certainly is that.
I was still smiling as the shuttle lifted off. Maybe it was crazy. I was just a little ball in a runaway roulette wheel, popping into one slot after another as it went around, one with a homicidal youth gang leader who was both the most frightening and the most compelling woman I had ever known, one with an ex-commando of the Special Service who was far better equipped to deal with the hammer blows of life than I was. So I wasn't sure how I'd ever manage to keep up. One with a man named Coles, who saw me as nothing more than just another chip in the very large pile of chips he had played with, and one with Akeem Sakara, who had started out holding all the cards and had wound up busted. You win a few, you lose a few. I had won that one. I had won it big. But the game continued at a breakneck pace. Perhaps I should have been afraid, but I was smiling.
Look at me now, Sean O'Toole, you old bastard. Talk about rolling high. You ever seen a game like this? All right, so deep down inside, I was scared out of my mind, but I was just too high to feel it. Breck would never understand, but Sean would. I had the fever. I couldn't wait to ante up. End of epilogue, end of book.